Getting the smile and confidence you've been dreaming about, all from the comfort of your home, isn't a total mystery with Bite Clear Aligners. Just don't be surprised if all your friends start asking, "What's your secret?" Begin by ordering your at-home impression kit today for only $14.95. Bite Clear Aligners are doctor-directed and delivered to your door. Treatment costs thousands less than braces, plus they offer flexible financing, accept eligible insurance, and you can pay with your HSA FSA. Get 80% off your impression kit when you use code WONDERY at Byte.com. That's BYTE.com. Start your confidence journey today with Byte.
The comfort of your favorite seat is now your comfy car selling command center, thanks to Carvana.
It doesn't get any better than this.
Your favorite seat's the best spot in the house. Make it even better by entering your license plate or VIN and getting a real offer in minutes.
There really is no place like home.
And speaking of home, Carvana will pick up your car from yours after you finalize your offer. Visit Carvana.com or download the app and sell your car from your comfy place.
Welcome to Hollywood and Levine. I am Ken Levine, your podcast host. And I know there are seven or eight other podcasts out there in the world, so I really appreciate you listening to mine. Got a great special guest for you this week. Actually, this week and next, George Wendt, who plays Norm on Cheers, is with me. This week, we'll be talking a lot about the start of his career, and we'll get into Cheers. And then next week, we're going to talk even more about his time on Cheers. So, Norm is my guest this week, right here on Hollywood and Levine. Well, the first thing I got to ask you about is your nephew. Your nephew is Jason Sudeikis?
Yeah.
Wow.
He's indeed my godson as well as my nephew. Anyway.
Ted Lasso is your godson.
Yeah. So he's my sister's oldest, and one of my four sisters. Anyway, so he's got oodles of cousins, and but he's doing great. I love his new show.
So what did you think you wanted to do when you grew up?
Me?
Yeah.
No idea. Not the foggiest. There was really nothing that seemed like it would be in any way work-related that I would ever want to do other than have to do. And so, I took a course, you know, like it was a requirement, some philosophy course, I think, ethics, I want to say. I'm not sure. I can't remember the course. What I do remember is this young Jesuit teaching us about Karl Marx's theory of, or concept, or whatever it was, of alienation, which I think what he was going for was the workers being alienated from the means of production or something. But taken in my case, I didn't want to be alienated from who I was or who it could be. And so I was determined, I boiled it down to I was determined not to do something that I hated. But I knew I had to do something. And it didn't occur to me till like about 2 years after I got out of college what it was.
So you were in Notre Dame for like 11 seconds, right?
Well, 3 years. maybe 11 seconds total class time.
You must have had fun though at Notre Dame.
I had fun. I did. We won the national championship in football my freshman year. And so that was cool. And that's all I cared about, really. I probably didn't really belong there. I was a legacy. I tested well. My grades in high school were not, they were very mediocre. But I tested well. My dad was an alum, so I got in, much probably like George W. got into Yale.
Didn't attend many classes.
One of my first memories is biology, freshman biology requirement, or some science requirement. But And I was, it was in the engineering auditorium, and it, there's about 400 seats in the room. And my first thought was, he'll never be able to take attendance. So I literally never went back to that class. I only went to labs. And somehow I got a seat.
So you find yourself in Chicago, and you stop in at Second City. Talk about your introduction to Second City.
Yeah, I was in college, you know, of course, born and raised in Chicago. But my sister, Kathy, Jason's mom, actually, took me to see Second City. And it was, it, you know, it's one of those moments that, you know, well, changed my life.
Did you always know you were funny?
It was Peter Boyle and Martin Harvey Friedberg and J.J. Barry. I can't remember who else. Anyway.
Did you always know you were funny?
Oh, I was sort of funny at parties, you know. Pretty shy otherwise. I think alcohol probably was my muse because, you know, people said I'd never open my mouth in school. I was not a class clown, but I observed and I stole from all my class clown classmates.
So what year did you first enter Second City?
Well, I started taking workshops in the fall of 73.
Okay.
So I'm counting that as the start of my quote-unquote career. Mm-hmm. So that makes it 48 years in this business, baby. 48 years. These kids today, they're not funny. Tell me, I know what funny is.
That's right. Yeah, with the cigar. So how long from the time you started workshops did it take for them to, like, actually put you on stage? Because I know it's really kind of a process where you graduate from level to level.
Yeah, back then, prehistoric times at Second City, there was only one workshop, and it was run by a woman named Josephine Forsberg, and she had about 15 students, I'd say, and that was it. So I had some good classmates, though. Brandon Tartikoff was in my workshop.
Was he really? Yeah.
Yes, he was.
Went on to become the president of NBC.
Yeah. And, you know, it's funny because Josephine had a little showcase for her workshop students in this Unitarian church in Old Town there down the street from Second City. And so I was too green to be involved. I had no experience and neither had Brandon. So we both wanted to be involved, but we weren't experienced enough to be in the show. So I volunteered to, like, set up chairs and, you know, folding chairs and break mm-hmm. them down after the show. And Brandon volunteered to, like, sell coffee and cookies, like, at a little, you know, table. And one day, you know, this magnificent show, like this Brandon and I were, like, on a high, even though we were just watching. And so I was breaking down the chairs and stacking them up, and Brandon's breaking down the coffee table, and he said to me, "One of these days, George, it's going to be me and you up there." And little did I know or dream that we would be up there, and it would be in front of, like, you know, 84 million
people.
What the hell? It was.
Did you ever get into that show?
Yeah, I did. Brandon did not. He disappeared. And I learned later that, you know, he got called by Silverman to go to New York and work for him. He at the time, see, I didn't know any of this. He was just a guy in my workshop, a Yale guy, but a guy in my workshop. Anyway, and he was a young executive at Channel 7, the ABC O&O, as they say, in Chicago. And then Silverman called him up to the New York office, I guess. And so for all I knew, hey, whatever happened to Brandon? Oh, well. And then years later, you know.
Yeah, you figure that guy left, that loser. He couldn't take it. So what prompted you to move out to L.A.?
Really, it was Bernadette, my lovely wife, as you well know.
Mm-hmm. Who you met at Second City, right?
Yeah, yeah. Mm-hmm. We met. Mm-hmm. We met.
It's good that 70s. You married her and not Peter Boyle.
We met in 76, and then we got married in 78, and then we moved to Chicago in 1980. What happened was Bernadette got a pilot that was shooting in L.A., and so off she went, and I was home with the two boys and, working at Second City still. And she came back. It was like a 2-3 week shoot. It was pretty involved. And because it was a live show, it was a sketch show. But anyway, she actually came back raring to go. She said, I think we should move to LA because agents and managers and people were very interested in telling her, oh, you got to come. You got to come out here. And I think there was a development deal in the works and things like that. And so I had been at Second City at that point, 1980, for 6 years. So because I joined the company in 74 after a year in the workshops. Imagine that.
Yeah, it's quite a bit of seasoning, I would say.
Yeah.
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 6 years of yes and.
I was like, yes, and let's go. And off we went. And, we just were insanely lucky.
Yep, you were doing some guest spots. You did one on MASH.
That's right. One on MASH, one on Taxi. One on, Soap.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right. So now it's 1981, and you get called in for an audition for some show called Cheers. Tell us about that.
Yeah. Well, I was on a show at the time. It was a Paramount show, oddly, a single camera sitcom from Gary David Goldberg called Making the Grade. And, so we shot six of them, and we were going to come on after MASH, by the way.
Mm-hmm.
It was,
don't mention after MASH, but yes. Okay.
They scheduled us on Monday nights at, whatever that was, 9:30 or something.
Mm-hmm.
So I thought, oh man, we're on Easy Street, but, we did not get picked up. Anyway, before I knew we didn't get picked up, my agent calls, honey, they want to see you on Cheers. It's a small, really small role, but you like those guys. I think, you should do them a favor. It's, remember you did Taxi with those guys, Glenn Charles, Les Charles, Jim Burrows. I said, yeah, they were nice. How small is it? She goes, well, it's one line really. Well, it's actually one word. Hey, come to think of it, it's one syllable. And oh, great. What's the word? And she goes, beer. And so I thought, wow, I have to look like a guy who wants to have another beer. That I can do. Because the original bit that I read was a teaser. Oh, no, I'm sorry. A tag at the end of the pilot where Diane had been hired. And then so we go away and we come back for the tag. And Diane comes up and goes, "Hello, I'm your waitress. I'm Diane." "Well, I'm not really a waitress. I'm really an academic," and on and on. She goes for like a paragraph as or two, as usual. And then she goes, "Oh, I'm sorry. I should take your order. What can I get you?" And I go, "Beer." She goes, "Beer. Perfect." And that was the end of the episode. So the late, great Stephen Kolzak, our casting director, original casting director for Cheers, said, "You know, that's really too small for you to read. What? We can't get a feel of anything. Why don't you read this one?" And the character was George. And so I read it real quick. And I went in and read that. And, you know, that was rather small, too. But the best story is Ratzenberger's, where he went in for the same role, George, and could tell it wasn't going well. And then he said, "Thank you. Yeah, thank you. Thanks for coming in." And he literally this time does have 1 foot out the door. And he turns around and pops his head back in and says, "Do you guys have a bar know-it-all?" And they said, "Well, no, what do you mean?" And he started riffing as that character. And they wrote him into it. I mean, so there you go. That's what's up.
Did George become Norm then?
Yes, of course. Yes.
Mm-hmm. So I seem to recall, because I was involved the week of the pilot.
Yeah.
And the pilot was incredibly long, and we kept cutting and cutting and cutting. However, we kept giving you a few more lines.
Interesting. Cool.
Yeah. When did you know that you were onto something special? And I say that because, again, having worked on the pilot, remember there was one run through where Jimmy had arranged for an audience to come and sit in the bleachers so that you guys would get a sense of an audience and holding for laughs and that sort of thing. And I remember it was like on a Tuesday at 4:30, 5 o'clock, something like that. But the audience just went nuts for the show. And that's when I thought, like real early on, like, wow, we may have lightning in a bottle here. When did you get that sense?
Well, the bloodlines with Glenn and Les and Jimmy and Paramount, frankly, the firepower Paramount put behind Cheers was, it was so much fun to have all these legends with overall deals at Paramount coming in, you know, one day a week. It was crazy. Anyway,
yeah, we had David Lloyd. We had Jerry Belson.
Oh, I know.
I mean, it was amazing. Sitting in that room, I felt like I was in the Algonquin Round Table.
Yeah. It was remarkable. And knowing the bloodlines, and Paramount was gold at that point with Gary Marshall had all those hits and, MGM seemed to have moved lock, stock, and barrel over there in a way. In between Taxi and Cheers and whatnot. But I had a good feeling about the show. Although, you know, I had a good feeling about Gary Goldberg, too. And, you know, so that show didn't
Don't go
work,
by you.
Sorry?
I remember we were filming in the summer, and we started filming like the end of July, beginning of August, and the show didn't premiere until the end of September. So for the first 5 or 6 episodes, the audience coming in to see it obviously did not know anything about the show. And we showed them like a 10-minute clip of the pilot to sort of orient them. But still, I recall one time standing on the floor with you and there was a Norm entrance and it just died. And you said to me after the take, like, what are we doing? These things are dying. And I said, the audience doesn't know yet. This is a running bit, and they're coming in the middle. Trust me, these norm entrances will work.
Yeah. Well, honestly, you know, I was thrilled that we got our back nine, you know, because we were...
Were you nervous because our ratings sucked that first year?
Oh, yeah. I thought, you know, 13 was... We were saying goodbye to everybody. And, you know, then even the next year, we were, like, nervous about a pickup for, you know, season two of back nine. And, but really, once Cosby... I mean, look, we knew the show was great. We got... 3 or 4 or 5 Emmys the first year. Mm-hmm. But really, you know, after Cosby just, you know, blew up the whole evening, you know, then I realized, oh boy, this could be just, you know, a long running thing.
At what point did people start yelling Norm to you on the street, which was probably a signal that, you know, I think the show is catching on?
I don't remember. Probably one of the earliest ones was a truck driver in New York City just really blasted that air horn at me and hung his head out the window. And, you know, up until then, it you know, Cheers was an odd show. It was a sitcom where, you know, we had the truck drivers, but we also had, you know, a very distinguished looking gentleman with salt and pepper beards and glasses and tweed overcoats. And, you know, it's like, you know, it was quite a went between classes, didn't it?
Yeah, it sure did. Well, and the same thing on the show where you would have, you know, blue collar, you know, civic servants and Frasier and, you know, people who were psychiatrists. Yeah. Okay, so now I got to ask you the obvious question that you're always asked, but I got to do it. Tell me about the beer. What was the beer?
Yeah, well... You know, Jimmy felt the cast might get sluggish if we had real beer. He was correct. And, like, I'm sluggish anyway. You know, like, I don't need help in that regard. But so it was Kingsbury. There wasn't a lot of choices for non-alcoholic beer back then, like now there is. And it was Kingsbury Brew Near Beer. And it came in cans, and it was from Cincinnati, I believe. And they didn't want it to be in cans. They wanted it to be on tap. And nobody made it on tap, so they had to use soda pop dispensers. So they poured cans of beer into soda pop dispensers well before we shot, so it was completely warm and flat. At time, you know, to shoot. Mm-hmm. And they go, we don't like the way that looks. It doesn't look good. So the prop man had to put a pinch of salt in every beer mug that was on the set. So whatever one Sam grabbed would have the salt in the bottom. And so it was warm, flat, salty, near beer. So
how many would you drink for an average episode?
You know, probably in the early days before I wised up, it would be, I'd probably drink 2 or 3 of them. And but then I figured out when the cameras were nowhere near, you know, pointing at me, that I didn't have to sit there and drink as if I were on stage or, you know, in a
right,
you know, in a one giant master all the time.
Right. Yeah, I remember taking a sip once and going like, oh, God. And so, you know, when Jim Burrows, the director, would say, okay, well, let's just do another take of this, which normally, so what? But if the take meant you got to drink another beer, like, oh, God.
Well, there are a couple
please,
of
please, let's get this on this take.
Yeah.
Please don't anybody screw up a line.
There were a couple of chugging gags, which was pretty fun.
But, what were some of your favorite episodes?
Well, you know, I don't know why, other than it was just really fun to shoot. I don't know. I related to it, and it's not just because I'm on your show. Jumping Jerks was the one where the boys all decided to go skydiving, and we mm-hmm. all chickened out. And I'm pretty sure it was Levine Isaac.
Yeah, it was. Yeah. It was.
And
thank you.
It had one of my two favorite jokes of the entire series. Maybe if you'll indulge me, I'll share both of them.
Yes.
But in this episode, it was we all go skydiving, and we all, boys, and we all chicken out. And we go, we can't go back and tell people we chickened out. We got to, you know, So we need to tell a story. We got to make sure we don't get crossed up with our story. So it needs to be very simple and believable. Right. Simple and believable. Simple and believable. And Sam goes, I've got it. We jumped, the parachutes open, and we landed. Simple. Believable. Right. So we go back to the bar. Woo! Oh, my God. Oh, I never felt so alive. That was amazing. You know, like, and Rhea's going, what happened? And we're going, oh, are you kidding? It was great. And she finally grabs Woody, the weak link, and she corners him in the corner of the bar. And she goes, Woody, what happened? And he goes, what? We jumped, the parachutes opened, and we landed. It was all very simple and believable. And whenever somebody says simple, I always say believable.
What's your other favorite joke?
That's the other favorite joke of the entire run. That might be my first, but the other one... it was also Levine and Isaacs. It was Bar Wars, and somebody had kidnapped Woody. They kidnapped Woody, the bad guys, and we're like going, geez, I wonder how he's doing it. And we see in the back, he's being lowered down. He's bound like Houdini and lowered down by his feet into the stairwell. And we run, oh, my God, it's Woody. And he's going, and because he has gaffer's tape on his mouth, we can't understand what he's saying. He's going, he's trying to tell us something. We'll take the thing. We rip the thing off, and he's like, rip the tape off. Dumb as wood, and yet so smart.
Okay, that'll do it for part one. Next week, more Cheers talk with Norm himself. That, of course, is George Wendt. Our thanks, as always, to Adam and Susie Meister-Butler, to Howard Hoffman, to John Wolford and Bruce and Jason Miller. I have an email address should you wish to get in touch. That is HollywoodLevine@Outlook.com. Again, that is HollywoodLevine@Outlook.com. I'm on Instagram, Hollywood and Levine. I have not been posting lately on Instagram, but I'm going to get back into it. I apologize. Also, I am on Twitter, @KenLevine. So again, next week, more Cheers talk with George Wendt right here on
Hollywood and Levine.
You know how to book flights and hotels. All you're missing is a tool to plan the travel experiences you'll have once you arrive. That's why you need Viator. Book guided tours, activities, excursions, and more in one place to make your trip truly unforgettable. Viator has over 300,000 travel experiences to choose from. Everything from simple tours to extreme adventures and all the niche, interesting stuff in between. So you can plan something that everyone you're traveling with will enjoy. Real traveler reviews give the inside scoop from people who've already been on the experiences you're considering, so you can plan with confidence. Free cancellation helps you plan for the unexpected, and 24/7 customer support means you can travel worry-free. Download the Viator app now and use code Viator10 for 10% off your first booking in the app. Find travel experiences for you. Do more with Viator.